All right. With the ideas that have been raised, though, by the Republicans, Mr. Carty, they've referred to the royal prerogative, the Privy Council and the Crown in Parliament as cases that the royals can actually overstep Parliament, in their words. But have we seen cases where the royal family has used that kind of authority? And do you think, as was suggested there, these kinds of statements and these kinds of position can bring about any change in how the public will view the royal family?
Well, the royal family's role now is purely symbolic and ceremonial. You won't find many constitutional experts who would say that they have much of a role or any significant political role nowadays. I think the main impetus for change, ironically, at the moment, might come from the saturation of media coverage of the wedding. That really is starting to irritate and annoy huge numbers of British people. The way in which the BBC, that's the state broadcaster, is really pumping out massive coverage of the wedding and the run-up to the wedding is really, it's highly likely to alienate people from the monarchy who perhaps normally wouldn't be all that bothered, wouldn't really be terribly concerned about this institution that's mostly in the background and that you don't have to pay attention to if you don't want to. But to really rub people's noses in it the way the media's doing at the moment, I think might well backfire and might produce a little bit more impetus towards the eventual disbandment of this institution. I'm not saying that's going to happen overnight or even right. very soon, but it inevitably over time, as we become a more educated and developed society, so right. support for the monarchy is likely to fade away. So ironically, I think the royal wedding might actually be speeding that process up.
Well, Mr. Rushton and Mr. Carty both said that they agreed the role of the royal family here is mostly symbolic. Stephen Lendman, one question, though, is the question of accountability on the part of the royal family when it comes to business issues. I mean, can the royals provide an answer for that question of accountability, though?
Well, the royals may not have actual authority, but they have moral authority. When the Queen has something to say, she can command the TV networks, the same as the Prime Minister can do, the same as the U.S. President can do here. And if a national figure, respected to some degree, wanted to speak out about things that she was concerned about, bad policies, imperial wars, wasteful government spending, government corruption, she can get the public airways anytime she wants, but she won't do it because she's part of the system. Just the way I'm trying to think of the equivalent in America, I would say our royals are the corporate chieftains and the political leaders, and they're partnered in the same enterprise to further the interests of the elites in the country and damn the ordinary commoner people. And that's exactly the way it is here, and it's the way it is in Britain. I think when things might go sour in either country, and I strongly believe we're heading in this direction, I've written so much about it, and I'm writing a book about it now, we are in hard times. I call it a Main Street Depression in America. Well, there's a Main Street Depression in the UK, across Europe, and it's getting deeper and deeper, where rich people are doing better than ever, especially bankers, but ordinary people are suffering deeply. As this pinches more and more
right.
in months and years ahead, people will get angrier and angrier, and sooner or later they'll react.
Right, you were just making a comparison there, Stephen, with the situation in the United States. I'd like to put that question to Mr. Rushton now. One argument, Mr. Rushton, is that the Windsor firms have a lot of political and economic power. At the same time, they're very secretive about their business deals. What do you think about that? Do you think that the fact that the royal family does exist, even though they don't have any real political power, speaking practically, but it does give them a free hand in doing those business deals, especially when it comes to the actions of the Windsor firms?
Well, I think in some respects the most tragic aspect of what's happened with the royal family in recent decades is that they've now become tainted, if you like, by some of the worst aspects that our so-called democratic rulers have become engaged in, particularly as far as international arms deals are concerned. We've seen with the uncle of Friday's bridegroom, Prince Andrew, the Duke of York, has been very much in the news in the last few months for his business connections with certain international businessmen, with international arms dealers, and with really with some of the shadier aspects of Britain's international business affairs. And it's particularly tragic that that a royal family that in an ideal world their one constitutional role should have been, as the constitutional scholar Walter Badgett famously put it, the right to be consulted, the right to encourage, and the right to warn, so that if the royal family were to have any realistic role in politics, it should have been behind the scenes just to warn our democratic leaders when they were being drawn towards things like the illegal wars that have been referred to earlier. Rather than playing that role, they've ended up being tainted by some of the very worst aspects of Britain's most sinister role in the world, with international arms companies, with some of the shady post-imperial affairs that British companies and international companies have got involved in, the Duke of York being just the most blatant example of that. It's a very sad thing, because in that sense, the royal family have the worst of both worlds. They don't have the democratic legitimacy, but they have the worst aspects of democratic corruption have tainted them. And I suppose, in a sense, it's an unenviable position for the royal family now to be in. One can merely hope that there's some truth in the story that Prince Charles, the heir to the throne, the Prince of Wales, actually takes a different view from the corrupt consensus on, for example, the Middle East, and that behind the scenes, who knows, he may eventually advise a different policy and help towards Britain for having a more just policy in the world. We can but hope.
Yeah, well, looking at things right now, though, Mr. Carty, I'd like to come to you. Another other issue that has caused controversy regarding this royal wedding is the invitation of royals from Bahrain and Saudi Arabia, which created, of course, the expected controversy that it should have. Why do you think they were invited? I mean, observers are saying, well, it's protocol that they should be invited, but don't you think that it wasn't worth the controversy that it would, of course, entail?
Well, I think it is purely an issue of protocol. The problem for the weddings organisers is that if they didn't invite heads of state from countries with poor democratic records, then there'd be hardly any heads of state at the wedding. The roll call of heads of state would decline by more than half. Mr. Rushton made some interesting points about the tainting of the royal family by some of the scandals and corruptions that have infested our system over the past few years. But I think it's important to remember that the royal family in Britain are not bright people. One of the problems with the Duke of York is that he's a very unintelligent individual, and the problem with him has been to try to find him some sort of gainful employment. The scandals that have attached themselves to him have basically been through his poor judgment in choosing his business associates. Now, I'm not saying that there hasn't been some greed and venality there too. I think Mr. Rushton's correct in that, almost certainly. But the problem is that this isn't a very bright family. They've had the best education that possible that money can buy, but they're not intellectuals. They're not able people. They are figureheads. They occupy a symbolic role, a symbolic function. And there is a kind of problem of what kind of role they can usefully
Mr. Carty, sorry for stopping you there.
Modern world.
Yeah, sorry for stopping you there, because we're running out of time, and I'd like to put the last minute to Stephen Lendman to have his last remarks on this as well. Mr. Lendman, some are suggesting, as also was suggested by Mr. Carty himself, that the wedding fever is actually not sweeping the whole population, but is largely what the media are up to, and that they're setting the agenda. How much of a role do you think the media is playing in all this? If you can just give that in less than a minute.
Well, I think the media plays a very major role. I suspect that the Brits are more intelligent about their media than Americans are. Too many Americans are deluded by the nonsense they get through the media. And the royal wedding is being played up here as well, not quite as much as it is in Britain. But the media is a central role in putting out this information. But if 80% of the British population is very negative on what's going on, I say bravo to the U.S., to the U.K. public, because right. They are a lot smarter than the politicians may give them credit for. Now they need a government that'll serve them and not the elitist interests, at the same time spurning the needs, their needs, that get greater every single day.
All right, thanks very much. A big thank you there to Stephen Lendman, writer and radio host in Chicago. I'd also like to thank in London Mr. Peter Rushton, historian and political analyst. And with us on the line from London was also Peter Carty, writer and journalist. Thanks so much for staying on this edition of News Analysis from me, Homa Lezgi, and our team here in Tehran. It's goodbye.